Now I would like to invite our interim Vice President, Avijit Ghosh, to give a presentation on finances.
There he is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Board of Trustees, you have already heard from both our board chair and our president about the capital program plans that they would like us to draw up. So what I would like to do, the main focus of today's discussion, is to give you some background on our capital spending over the last few years and how we have funded those spending. But before we do that, I'd like to spend just a couple of minutes talking to you about our year-to-date, up to November 30, our revenue and expense trends. Okay. I would, though, caution that most of our revenue and expenses are somewhat lumpy. They are not even by the month. So just looking at 5 months doesn't give you a whole picture of the whole year. Nevertheless, I think it's important for us to keep track of what our revenue and expenses are during different points in time of the year and take corrective action if necessary. But what we see here is something that we don't need to take any corrective action. If you look at our revenue picture, our revenue for the first 5 months are actually up by 14.5% over last year, and that's one of the reasons is mainly due to the changes in the state appropriation. As you recall, last year we had a stopgap state appropriation. This year we have a much larger state appropriation for FY18. So we have prorated that, and so that's one place for increase. But if you look at the other revenue sources, they're pretty robust. Tuition fees increases by 3.1%, despite the fact that tuition was not increased. Tuition rate was not increased. All tuition revenues have increased. And then also patient care increases. On the research grant side, I would like to point out this is one element which really is very lumpy. It doesn't come in steady at a time. It typically will come in more the later in the year. So that negative 3% is something we will keep track of, but not so concerning at this time. But here's a good picture on the expense trends. If you look at the expense trends and they've broken it down into sort of four items of expenses, the top two and then the bottom two, first of all, let me address those, the student aid and depreciation. These are expenses you don't want to see go down. You want to see student aid keep up and even provide more aid to students. Secondly, you don't want to see depreciation going down because that means you're not investing in capital. You want to see depreciation be healthy there, okay? But if you look at the top two, compensation and supply and services, you will see the compensation has increased only 0.2% despite the fact that this is year over year, salary increases and things like that is only increased by 0.2%, so we're trying to keep that in control. But more importantly, you can also see the supply and services. This is the sort of what we really can control, expenses that we can really control, is down by minus 2.8%. And I'd like to point out that our FY17 expenses for supplies and services were less than even what we had spent in FY15. So you see a three-year trend in controlling our expenses. So my colleagues around the system are doing their part in trying to sort of keep the costs under control, which is something that we need to keep our focus, continue to keep our focus on. So if we talk about capital investment, and most of the capital investment I'm going to talk about today is focused on physical facilities. We're not going to talk about other kinds of capital, but physical facilities, okay? So as Trustee Corey's mentioned earlier, if we look at the period from FY14 to FY17, this four-year period, the total amount we have spent is about $1.225 billion, okay? So that's a large number. But one of the things I would like to talk to you about today is why we spent it, how we spent it, what kinds of facilities, and then ask a question at the end as to is that enough, okay? So you see our expenses, capital expenses were peaked in 2015, when we have $335 million of capital expenses. Okay, we're speaking. And this is all inclusive of all capital expenses, everything, every physical facility project that has been built that is capital. Okay? The board sees many of them, but not necessarily all of them. The board approves any project which is greater than $5 million budget, and the board also approves any contract that's above $2 million, so those also come to the board. But there are a lot of other projects that are done that are beyond that, below that limit, especially some of the deferred maintenance work that's done is all often below that limit. So we have built all kinds of things. New buildings sometimes trying to take our making sure that things don't fall out of the university hall, renovations of that nature, utilities, athletics, all kinds of facilities, student residence halls, variety of different facilities that we have tried to build through this. Of that 1.25 million, new buildings account for only 12%. Okay. New buildings account. Utilities is another major area where we have spent on physical facilities. So that accounts for 12%. And I'll say renovations of 38% is about renovations. And then a 38% what I would call really deferred maintenance. These are roofs, envelopes, HVAC systems, things like that. Okay. So that's the sort of the basically the spending pattern that we have for the last few years. Okay. Whether this is the right mix or not, that's something that we really have to look into as we do our long-term planning. So as I said, we have major projects about $5 million and then many projects under $5 million. You see where the money has been spent, the location of those projects. It gives you some idea about that. And then this gives you an idea of the different classes of buildings that we have spent it on. Academic building, auxiliary buildings. We've done quite a bit of good work on energy retrofit. So this is, and spend capital on that. Athletics, hospital and the clinics, as well as utility infrastructures. Okay. To going back to Trustee Edwards' question yesterday, so when you see auxiliaries, these are the student dorms, student dormitory, residence halls, dining facilities, and things like that. So these are paid out of the revenues of those units. Okay. Similarly, the hospital and clinics is paid out of the revenues of the hospital and clinics. Okay. How were the projects funded? So this gives you a sense of where the projects are funded. About half, just about half of them, comes from out of operating funds. Okay. Then gifts and grants accounted for about 12%. There was some level of state capital appropriation. These are older appropriations which got spent over in 2014, 2015, early part. That's about 7% of that. Student fees and facility fees, the AFMA fee that students pay, that accounted for about 10% of that. And 13% was funded through bonds and some through reserve funds, auxiliary reserve funds. Okay, so this gives you a sense of how these were actually funded, projects were funded. As you can see, most of it is funded through our operating funds. Okay, and we need to start thinking more about how we manage our own operating funds so that we can ensure that we can put monies behind facilities as needed. So I want to switch a little bit and talk about debt financing. We saw some of our projects are funded through debts. We want to talk about debt financing, where we stand today, and what are our opportunities for debt financing. So right at this point in time, we have about $1.5 billion of debt outstanding. Okay, this is used to finance a variety of projects. Not all of them are physical facilities. Some of them are for systems and other capital expenditures that has been funded through this. Okay, but most of it is for physical facilities. So we have the university can issue five types of long-term debt. Okay, Most common is the auxiliary facility bonds. So these are bonds issued for building auxiliary facilities or renovating auxiliary facilities, which are guaranteed through the reserve to the revenues of those auxiliary facilities. Auxiliary facilities are treated as closed systems in our process, so they have to pay their costs to the revenues they generate. Okay. Same way with the hospital service facilities. These are bonds that are issued by the hospital, and they're actually rated separately for the hospital and then paid back by the hospital. There's a special group of auxiliary bonds which were raised for Chicago South Campus, the South Campus construction that was raised. It's a separate tranche of auxiliary facilities bonds that were raised. Then there's certificates of participation. There was a period when the university could raise bonds and secure it through their own operating funds directly. That permission to do that was went away in 2014. The state laws changed, by which the university can no longer directly issue bonds secured by its own revenues. Okay. But we still have number of certificates of participation outstanding. And then there's the energy service contracts. These are ESCOs, where we take money up front to do any change of HVAC systems and things like that, and then they're paid back through the energy savings that are accumulated through those contracts. Okay. This gives you a sense of where they are, the bonds are held. The bonds are held by about 55% for facilities in Urbana and auxiliary facilities and other facilities in Urbana, about 30% in Chicago, 7% for the hospital, and then a small amount at Springfield and by the system. This gives you a little bit more breakdown if you want to see it. As you can see, most of the bonds are for the auxiliary facility systems. Our debt servicing cost, the annual debt servicing cost at this point is about $153 million, of which interest is about $65 million and principal payment of $89 million approximately each year. But what I want to also draw the line that our debt services do go down, and this is sort of the next 30 years up to 2048 what our debt services are. As you can see, our debt services, especially after the next 5 years, start going down as we pay our principal in a very accelerated rate. Okay. Ratings. As you know, all our bonds are rated by the Moody's and S&P. And the ratings are based on both quantitative factors and qualitative factors. Quantitative factors, things were our ability to pay back those loans. And then, but qualitative factors are also very, very important. And I think this is where, the diversity of our revenue base, even though there is uncertainty about the state revenue, we have so many different sources of revenue bases. That's what gives us strength when we go out for bonds. I think our overall reputation and the student demand with increases in freshman enrollment, you heard before, those are factors that, qualitative factors that have a big impact on bond ratings. Okay. Where do we stand on our bond rating? The state of Illinois, as you know, is in the Baa3 rating on the extreme left, and you can see the whole series of our bonds. We have most of our bonds at least four notches above the state bond. And our weighted cost of capital right now is about 4.5%, okay, which is an important indicator that we have to keep in mind. Okay. Trustee McMillan has often asked in the past about the relationship between the state rating and our rating, so I'm going to try to sort of address that indirectly by showing you this, which shows some of the quantitative factors which bond rating agencies use and where we stand. I'm show you five ratios here. The red is our ratios which you want to be high, and the blue are ratios where you want to be low. Okay, so it's things like annual debt service coverage, what our total debt to capitalization rate is, and as you can see here, on the first column, I've given you what our University of Illinois would, those ratios would be. Then you will see for the median AA3 rated bonds, what those ratios would be, and the median A1. And the last column shows the median for all comprehensive public universities. Okay. As you can see, in all of those ratings, we do very well. Mm-hmm. Our annual debt service coverage is 3.0, whereas the, you can see the median A1 are lower than that, okay? The one place that we don't match up here is the monthly days cash in hand, where we are lower than what our peers would have or other higher rated bonds would have, okay? On the other hand, I do want to point the fact that if you look at our monthly days on cash on hand, that measure was on June 30th, which is cyclically our lowest point in days of cash in hand. And as you can see, more recent days in cash in hand is much more than that 148 you saw before. Okay. So on all of these ratios, we do very well. And I would argue that it warrants a higher rating. But this is where the factors of the state economy, state finances hurts us and pulls our ratings down. Okay. As a matter of fact, even if we had $300 million more of debt, our ratios would still look very robust. Okay. So this is an additional source of revenue, you know, financing that we can gain by having more debt. Secondly, we're also going to be paying off a lot of our principal in the next few years. In the next 5 years, we'll pay off $470 million of principal. And this is important in the context of the long-range planning we're going to do because we have to sort of think about the funding model for those facilities that we might conceive of. So we have some capacity. Plus, there is capacity coming from projects like the P3 projects where we can be more innovative in terms of how we can finance our programs. So there's a capacity today to come up with and respond to the board's request for a much more longer range planning and thinking. Okay. So the question is, are we investing enough? Okay. If you look at this question, and there's various ways one can try to answer this question. Definitely $1.2 billion sounds like a large amount, okay? Well, one way of looking at it is to look at two ratios. One is the capital spending ratio, which is simply how much you're spending on capital and how much you're depreciating. Okay. So if the ratio is one, that means you're reinvesting exactly the same amount as you're depreciating. And you can see the numbers for us, what it has been. The second line is a capital investment to compare to your operational expenses. Okay, but if we look at the top line and say 1.26, so we are spending more than we are depreciating. But I think it's important to remember that we depreciate in historical costs and we spend in today's money. So if you're just spending what you're depreciating, you're just replacing it at historical cost. So this ratio should be more than 1, and I would argue it should be more than 1.26. At the same time, we should remember that we haven't received state appropriations. But if I compare it to many of our peers, it doesn't seem like we're spending as much as we should, given the stock of the facilities that we have. So again, the call for a more long-range planning and thinking is exactly what we should be addressing this. Okay. especially given the context that we have a lot of old buildings. The heading is wrong. It shouldn't be pre-1990. It's pre-1900. So I was actually going to do a trivia question here. Which is the oldest building in the system? And you probably would not have thought that the oldest building is in Springfield.
Okay.
The oldest building in the system is from 1845, the Strawbridge Shepherd House in Springfield. It has been partially renovated. It is occupied, but it needs a lot more work. James Adams Hall House, you all know, it's been renovated. And Mumford House in Urbana is another old building which is actually not occupied, in dire strait of need for repair. These are all in the National Historic Registry. Okay, these are all in the National Historic Registry. Here, Harker Hall is renovated. You can see how beautiful it looks when you're renovated. Natural History Building in Urbana, that's been renovated recently, okay? And it's been turned into a beautiful place. The Police Station Building in Chicago, okay? Built in 1888, that's where the UIC police is there. The chancellor probably knows these stories, but it's a famous police station. This is where Al Capone was incarcerated, okay? And it's also famous nowadays because this is the precinct outside of which you see in Chicago PD show, as well as my favorite show from 1980s, Hill Street Blues. Those buildings are this, okay? Alger Hall. I do want to talk about this for a moment. Named after the 20th governor of the state of Illinois, Alger Hall in Urbana, right near the Quad, is a building where 84% of every Illinois undergraduate takes a class. Wow. Yet, it is in dire need of renovation. If you walk through Alger Hall, you'll realize in a second. And our long-range plans needs to accommodate these kinds of academic buildings where so many students take classes. How are you going to make sure that they are designed, not only just renovate, to repurpose and make sure that those spaces are right for the kinds of classrooms we need today? Okay. This is just a histogram of where building. You see, a lot of our buildings came up in 1960s and 70s, and those have been now becoming 50, 60 years old. We have outstanding deferred maintenance estimated to be about $1.75 to $2 billion. So these numbers are important to keep in mind as we think about our long-range plan. We have a lot of needs for new facilities to support education and the innovation missions you set. So I would like to start work with all the people, leadership in the different universities, to really think through this long-range planning. A long-range capital plan which thinks about a prioritization process but also tries to balance amongst different types of buildings that we need, okay, with strong sustainability and environmental standard, but also a process by which we can make sure that we are focusing on the life cycle cost and the cost of construction. And then we have to figure out a prudent funding model for these facilities. Okay. And this all has to be done within the context of our overall budget planning, as we said, because a lot of this is funded through our operating budget. So I'm looking forward to working on the task that the board has set for us. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Vijay, that was a very enlightening presentation. Thank you for that excellent synopsis. It covers areas that I was not aware of, and I should be, and I thank you for bringing that to light. Comments or suggestions? Yes, Jill?
I just have one question. Way in the front on the comp, how it wasn't going up very much, does that include, what? because one of the things you've done this year is set aside, I think it's $30 million. Do I have that, or some number for faculty, specifically for faculty? So would that have been in there, or is that not included in there?
No, this is only spending on buildings and facilities. That does
but
not.
But the compensation line item. So that's not payroll.
Sorry.
Like
okay.
Way in the beginning.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The compensation line. Yes, yeah. It includes all compensation.
Okay. So.
Faculty who would come later. They're not in that number yet.
The $30 million hasn't been spent yet.
Oh, but is it in the plan? Okay, but if it's in the plan, then how come the difference, like there's not a $30 million increase from last year to this year's budget?
Yeah.
Am I making sense?
Two points related to that. First of all, when the person talks about $30 million, it's not purely all for compensation. So a lot of it is startup costs.
Okay
a lot of it is startup costs for building labs. And if there's a major capital building, that would come up in the capital side. But on the compensation side would only come up the salary part, okay? And if any of those that have been put in place, that will be part of here, okay? But you have to recall that we have a lot of people, so there's a fluctuation in a lot. So we might be adding some people as faculty staff, but we might be losing some people in other areas, okay? So that sort of balances those things.
Okay.
I think Trustee Smart's question highlights something that, Vijay, you talked about at the end of your presentation, which is the difference between operating expenses and capital.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about, the $30 million, if it's spent, would be in compensation, which would be in our operating expenses. And then Vijay went into a thing about capital.
Right, so this was before that.
This was before
part.
That.
Yeah.
Right. I have a few comments, Sherman.
Yeah, please.
Obviously, I think everyone knows that I've been pushing hard on through our committee with Chairman Cepeda on the committee on how we do our planning, and I commend Avijit very much for really starting to take a hard look at our capital spending and recommending that we start to develop a 5 and, in my opinion, 10-year capital plan, which I think it's very important that we do it by campus. In other words, that we have priorities at each campus, working with each chancellor, and that those priorities get represented in the plan. What you said at the end, Avijit, and Trustee Smart, your question, we, as everyone knows, do not have a separate capital appropriation from the state. We have not gotten one for 10 years. So as you pointed out in your pie chart and your comment at the end, our capital spending, our sources for that are largely our operating funds. Mm-hmm. And so as we do this plan, 54% in your presentation, as we do this capital planning, it has to be, and this was your point, it has to be 100% in concert with our financial plan, our operating plan, because they are one and the same. We need our operating expenses, and then we need our capital expenditures, and we need to plan them together because we don't have a source of funds for capital other than our operating funds. Of course, we could raise more money, and, you know, I'm always on the bandwagon for increasing our fundraising, which can often go to pay for buildings separate from our capital plan. If we can raise more money, we can spend more than what's in our plan. So I think that not only do we need this capital plan, but we also, as Vijay kind of foreshadows, need to incorporate the capital plan into what's something that hasn't been done in the past, which is a long-term financial plan in this 5 and 10 year period of time. And to do that and to make sure that we have enough money for capital, I think it's very important, and it's something I've been talking to the president about, the chairman about, and something I would like to talk about publicly. It's very important that we look at our expenses very carefully by campus, by university, and we compare ourselves to our peers, and we start to take a hard look at our operating expenses so that we can make sure we have enough money for capital, since we don't have a capital spending appropriation from the state. That being said, if you look at Avijit's presentation, we are paying off $100 million of debt a year out of our operating revenues. So just in our own, you know, capacity today, we have, if we do that, we are creating $100 million of debt capacity approximately each year. And so we actually have, within our current operations, a substantial wherewithal, if we plan for it, to spend a good amount of money on all these needs that we have. And to that end, I believe that with this financial capacity that we have, the board and the leadership should look at this proposal for the DPI and whether we have funds available through this kind of planning to potentially dedicate to that effort, because as at the groundbreaking or the whatever the ceremony was, whatever it was, you know, we were talking about waiting for state funds and fundraising and all that. And I would put out there to the board that as we look at our capital availability, our debt pay down, we consider whether we have the capacity to potentially invest in the DPI ahead of some of those commitments from the state to get the project started, because I personally believe, I said it at that event, and I feel it even more so today, that starting that institute for the benefit of our entire system and our students in the state of Illinois is probably the single most important thing we can do to maintain and build upon our reputation in engineering and in computing and in the sciences. And I think it's critical, as I said at the groundbreaking, I think it's huge for Urbana, I think it's huge for UIC, for Springfield as a node. I think that it's critical, and if we have the capacity that you're talking about, Avijit, in there as we pay down debt, perhaps as we do this plan, looking at making a commitment to that is something we could take a look at. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. thank you for your insight. I couldn't agree more with everything you said there. I appreciate you spending the brain power to figure it out.
Yeah.
Ed?
Yeah, I would just amen, Don, what you said and what BJ said. I think this template that you have on the screen is the responsible way of thinking about it. I think from my corporate life, as we make decisions on capital and how we balance it, it has to always come back to strategically, where are you trying to go, and how does the whole thing fit together and operationally. The thing we forget many times when we're putting buildings up is you have to operate them when they're done. So the ongoing cost of that has to fit in with the priorities that you all see on the campuses, and that's a critical piece of this process. So, Don, thanks. Don't let up.
Yeah. And because we don't have separate capital appropriations, the reality, it's a harsh reality, but the reality is every dollar we spend on a building we either borrow or we come out of operating funds is a dollar that could be spent somewhere else. On faculty, on programming, on research, on initiatives. And so we have to do this capital plan in concert with a long-term financial plan so that we can make sure that we are using our what would be our income statement, our cash flow, and putting them together so that we are addressing all of our priorities to the best possible outcome for the state of Illinois.
Couldn't agree more. Prioritization is key, and it's exciting to know that we have this capability. Avijit, did you want to make another comment?
I just wanted to say I completely agree. I think also the operating plan and the capital plan, the capital plan represents a sort of intergenerational commitment in a sense, okay? We can't be just focused on today. We have to be, as an institution, be also focused on the future. And the capital plan is the vehicle by which we try to do that. So it's going to be very important, okay?
I just want to comment and thank Trustee Edwards and Trustee McMillan yourself, and particularly the leadership. From day one, Trustee Edwards has been emphasizing these areas. Just one little comment. We are not going to give up on capital funding from the state of Illinois.
No.
We have a proposal in. We're going to push hard on it. It's time for the state to return to supporting its own capital needs and investments over many years, and we've got a very strong argument for that, and which we'll continue to make, and I think we're making headway. So we will not give it a probability of one, but we will not give up on that either.
I'd like to emphasize that as well. I mean, I think we have support in legislature and in the governor's office, and we just need to keep pressing, and they have their financial issues, but university is a critical part of the economic development of the state and therefore of this country, and they should be investing in capital for the system. And lastly, I'd just like to commend Avijit for really taking the bull by the horns on these issues and coming in and making a real difference I've seen since he's taken over.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other comments? Wonderful discussion.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Avijit.